Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Cyber Security Recruiter Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Jude Sunderbrook. How you doing, my friend?
Hello. Happy to be here.
Yeah, likewise. For everyone listening, I was just apologizing to Jude because I ran late at the start of the week and then we just had some technical issues getting in the virtual studio. So it's the phrase I like to use at the minute is beautiful organized chaos within our agency at the minute. We've got new people starting and all sorts going on, but it's good fun.
I understand how it goes.
Cool, yeah. You had a good week so far, my friend. Has it been okay?
I did, yes. It's been good. It's here in the Washington, D.C. area. It is a bit rainy today, but it's warming up and there's flowers.
Cool. And there's quite a bit going on in D.C. right now, isn't there? It's certainly not boring.
It's not boring. It's the first day.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, there's a lot going on. I was saying to someone on the phone the other day, you turn the news off for 3 or 4 days and you literally miss 3 or 4 executive orders. It's fast pace.
Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, Jude, thanks for doing this, my friend. I know you're a busy chap yourself, so I do appreciate it. For the listeners that don't know who you are, I'm just going to do you a bit of an intro. If I get anything wrong, feel free to shout at me, but I'll do my best. But yeah, started off as an Air Force Office of Special Investigations. You worked your way right up to Associate Director and you were there as a special agent and in charge. You were there for around 6 years. Shortly after that, you were a professor at George Mason University. You were then a special advisor to the assistant director in the cyber division, the FBI. You were then a command counterintelligence coordinating authority at the US European Command. You were then US Cyber Command for around 3.5 years. You were then an executive director at the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. You then spent some time in the US Air Force Reserve. And you were then a executive director in the DOD at the Cybercrime Center. And you are currently, it's a posting that you're holding right now, the managing director at Oak Trust Group. Jude, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yeah, cool. There's a few stories there is what I'm trying to say. It sounds like it's been quite an interesting career.
It's been really enjoyable. I appreciated the opportunity to serve.
Yeah, cool. But I know I've done you a bit of an intro, but where I always like to start, who are you? What do you get up to? What's a day in the life like right now?
Yeah, I'll provide a little bit of context on my career. I came into the U.S. Air Force first as a military officer. And then within that service, I had the opportunity to serve as a special agent of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. And that's a part of the Air Force that does a mission that's somewhat similar to the FBI in terms of doing criminal investigations and national security work. So as you mentioned, I did that for 7 years on active duty. And then I went into the Air Force Reserve. And I became a civil servant and ended up serving as a civilian special agent with MSI while also serving as a reservist. And ultimately, as a reservist, I focused more on cyber affairs and cyber operations, as well as foreign affairs, attaché, international kind of work. And along the way, I had the opportunity to serve in various capacities where I was on loan to various places. So I had the chance, as you mentioned, to serve over an FBI cyber division. Served in various leadership positions, had the opportunity to serve outside of the United States 3 different times for about 10 years all told. And then at the end of my government career, I served in one of the key leadership positions in OSI, which was a real privilege. And then I ended up serving as the director of the DC3, the DoD Cyber Crime Center, which is one of several federal cyber centers in the United States. So I brought that part of my career to a close in the summer of 2024, and then I transitioned to my current role with Oak Trust Group, where I lead our client-facing operations in 4 main disciplines. So one of them is our cybersecurity advisory practice. We also do a virtual chief information security officer There's obviously a certain amount of overlap in those two areas in terms of the offerings we provide. We do penetration testing, and then we also help companies and organizations with the development of insider risk programs. It's been a career that's afforded me the opportunity to see and participate in a lot of different things. And I've certainly been learning a lot over the last year as I've had the opportunity to move into the private sector.
Cool. Yeah, no, I bet it's been interesting. And you've worked, the postings, they've been very senior, kind of director level positions. Is there anything that you think that you did differently to others to get yourself up to that level? Is there anything that you know now that you wish you knew back then in terms of what facilitated that kind of career growth and progression up to director level?
I was extremely fortunate that after I had been in the government for about 6 or 7 years, that there were a number of people who invested in me by talking to me about what the future could look like and what the opportunities were out there. So OSI, the organization that I was a part of for a long time, it's a global organization. It has 300 locations with about 3,500 people, and it has a pretty varied mission portfolio. And after 5 years or so, you've seen a tiny sliver of it. And there was a senior leader I worked for who, he rewarded hard work with time with him where he offered insight. And it wasn't a spoken, like, how do you say? It wasn't that he said that explicitly, was that somebody gave me a piece of advice once that I figured out that it was worthwhile to check in before you walked out the door each day to ask your boss if they needed any help. So one day I found myself in there reviewing some materials with my supervisor, and he told me, hey, why don't you sit down and let's talk? And he began opening for me an understanding of all the different opportunities were out there. And over time, he introduced me to other people who methodically invested in me by explaining choices that I could make that might increase opportunities and different doors that I could follow. So I didn't always follow every piece of advice. There were times that I took a little bit more risk than I might have. And there were times that I chose to play it safe. But I think on balance, the fact that there were men and women, people who chose to invest in me, that's something that benefited me greatly and afforded me opportunities. And that's something that I've been trying to do ever since when I talk with people at earlier stages of their career.
Yeah, I love that too. So basically, you checked in, a little check-in to see if anything else needed doing just before you left. That was what established that extra strong connection in comparison to others, yeah?
I think it did. It's something I've done pretty consistently through the years. And in a virtual world, many people worked from home during that era. That was still something that you could do. It's a little bit different. Now I do a fair amount of remote work. And in the same way, there's a benefit to checking in with your teammates and with those that you support who are part of your leadership chain to just make sure that things are either closed out for the day or there's a good understanding. And this doesn't even have to be every single day, particularly given how technology has evolved. But I found that engagement from time to time, it can also do a reset if there's been a misunderstanding about something, particularly if you've churned in a project that may not have been on par with what the boss was looking for. There's a chance there to get a redo sometimes before you get a little bit too far down the path and go in the wrong direction.
I love that. And it can still be done in the virtual world, but sometimes, and one of the reasons we started this pod is, like, I always worry about in the remote world is that sort of thing. Maybe now you've had the success you've had and you're a bit older, it probably maybe seems quite easy, but I can imagine for a young person coming through, if they didn't have the confidence, that might seem like quite a big deal to do that, and maybe a little bit harder in the virtual world. I can imagine being in the office and rubbing shoulders with your boss and stuff like that. I bet it was helpful at the time. Maybe people have got to be a bit more intentional about this kind of thing these days, because I think you're right. I think it makes a massive difference.
Yeah, I would say that in terms of now as one of the more senior people around, I travel a fair amount. And when I'm having the opportunity to engage with team members who are located all around the country, or in my previous capacity where I was working for the government, when I was traveling around the world talking to team members, I found that setting aside purposeful time where you are talking to up-and-coming individuals and just having a cup of coffee or a meal where you're not actually talking about the current crisis of the day, but you're taking a step back and asking them about how they are as a person, what their goals are, where they wish to go. One, people put their guards down. They will, I think, develop a degree of trust with you because it's meaningful to everybody when you can tell that somebody actually cares about you. And I think there's several benefits to that. One is I think people end up probably thinking of things that they would have never thought of otherwise, career-wise. And they think about training opportunities. They think about ways that they might engage in certain projects and such. But I also think that it can also give you a degree of insight where when someone trusts you, They will then tell you about things that are not working. And it may not be in that conversation, but it might be a week or two later where they say, hey, I just wanted to talk with you, Jude, about project A, B, and C, because there's a couple of aspects of this that aren't really going quite to track with the client. And personally, I'd much rather know about that a couple of months into an engagement as opposed to too far down the road. So yeah, I think that person to person, if you can do it with a cup of coffee, is very valuable. Mm-hmm. I'd also say, though, I've had some people that I've worked with who I've never actually met in the real world. But you can do something similar when you choose to deliberately set aside a conversation where you say, we're not going to talk about this engagement or this particular thing. I just want to catch up with you and see how you're doing. And I think that there's still definite benefits of getting together occasionally in person. And if you can't, I think that those deliberateness in your engagements can make a big difference and increase trust.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think so. And yeah, so it establishes a stronger connection, better rapport. Just talking it out enhances communication skills as well. And then from a leadership perspective, you're more approachable and you're getting that feedback from your team so you can refine things and improve things accordingly and keep moving the organization or the team forward. Yeah, no, it's good. And what I like about it as well is, like, in this world, and I'm guilty of this, like, at the minute, it's like constantly rushing around and doing things. And I think having that extra communication, it just brings everything down a notch. And it is almost like a bit of therapy. Like, I'm a bit stressed at the minute, but just talking to you now and listening, I've already calmed down. It's like these pods are like a mini therapy session for me. Like, I didn't realize they were going to be, but they are. And when you're talking to people that have been in their careers for a while, you tend to get some pretty solid advice. And I can really see the benefits of just taking it down a notch or two and actually doing that. I bet it's quite nice as well for both sides.
I think so. I think probably part of that was informed by some of the things that I did across the course of my career, which were, frankly, could be quite stressful when you're working in a criminal investigation or law enforcement work, or you're focused on anti-terrorism related efforts and things of this nature. One of the things that they do when you have the opportunity to serve in the military or law enforcement is there's a thing called muscle memory, where they train you so that you have almost an instinctive reaction. On the street, someone is coming up to attack you. How do you respond? Or something where there's a crisis and people have a plan as to who is going to do what. And that can be as simple as knowing, like, Janet is going to answer the phone. Bill is going to take notes. Jude is going to be the person that makes decision in this phase of the crisis. Practicing those things, I think, can reduce stress. And I found that coming into high stress situations, like, for example, when there's a cyber incident, just getting everybody to just take a breath and to try to make calm and measured decisions, that can be very helpful. And often I think it results in better outcomes.
Yeah, I think so. I used to meditate quite a bit, Jude, but I've pretty much stopped now. I don't know if you've ever done any meditation, but when I do it, it's great. And have you ever done it yourself? Or
I have not, although it's curious. I was just speaking with a close colleague yesterday who was asking me about how I'm recovering from travel now that I am a little bit older and still young at heart. And he had mentioned that he has been a pretty consistent meditator. So that's two people in a couple of days. So it may be something I have to add to the exploratory to-do list.
It's just the way that I've had it described to me is it just allows you to basically look at your own life as though you're looking down at yourself from like a helicopter view, and you can just keep things in perspective. And
what I'm about to say is probably the thing to say while I'm being recorded for a podcast, but what I would offer is that I have, over the course of the last several years, I've always been a runner, but lately I've also started going on really long walks. And although I definitely listen to podcasts for a portion of these walks, I've also found that sometimes it's beneficial to, it's maybe a version of meditating where you're really not have any other sensory input other than just really trying to listen to the birds and walk down the street or walk in the country. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think if you're a runner, 100%, that is a form of it. I think people that go to the gym and stuff, and if you're going for your long walks, I'm imagining you're getting some of the benefits already. But what I heard is, because when I do it, my mind wanders and goes all over the place, and I'm like, that was a waste of time. But apparently, even if you do it for 5 minutes and you get 20 or 30 seconds of actually just resting your mind. And then the next time you maybe get 40 or 50, and it's actually, you're still getting quite a bit of benefit, even if it seems like it's only a very short space of time. So yeah. Okay. Yeah, you're motivating me to start again. I think I need to. And the times that I find it hardest to do it is probably the times where we need it the most. It's so cool. But Jude, I'm going to come back in a few minutes. I appreciate there's probably stuff you can and can't talk about it, but it'd be nice to hear some of your stories from the various postings you've had and the FBI and various different things. It'd be nice to dive into that. But just before we do, so you were stopping at the door on your way out and you were getting that additional mentoring that not maybe everyone was getting, and you put that down to a lot of your career progression over the years. What sort of stuff were you being taught, and what were there any kind of key lessons that really stick out from that mentoring that could help people listening?
Yeah, I would say that the first and most important piece of advice I got was, is whenever you hope to do a really good job with what you're doing right now. And so I think for example, I was focused at the start of my career on criminal investigations, which was some pretty challenging things like investigating child sexual abuse or death or arson, things of this nature. And I was quite interested in national security work, in trying to investigate threats from either nation states, in my case to the United States, or international terrorism. And I wanted to do that, but the advice that I got was, you really need to focus on doing a really good job and being a very high quality investigator. And after you've done that and proven that you can either prove or disprove the allegation, because sometimes you're proving somebody innocent if they've been in the wrong place at the wrong time or falsely accused. And in some cases, you're proving that people actually did something against the law. Do that really well. When you have the opportunity to volunteer for additional training, take it. And then over time, other doors and opportunities will present themselves. And so I think when you're thinking about information technology and cybersecurity, I've had many colleagues who have really grown up into extremely senior roles in cybersecurity and information technology and related fields. And they started with some challenging, unfun things at the beginning, working in a corner, telling people to reboot their machine, putting information into a ticketing system. And the thing is that if you do those challenging things in the beginning and you invest in yourself over time, one, I think you probably end up making better decisions when you end up being in charge of a whole group of people providing support. And people have a degree of respect. That's where you came from. So you don't have to start from the ground up. But I think that was one of the things, that this idea of focusing on the near term and then thinking about what you can do to prepare yourself for the future. I'd say that the second thing that I was told and also figured out on my own was investing in myself and also constantly trying to learn. So I was fortunate as a human being that I had the support of my family to go to college, and I did the Reserve Officer Training Corps program in the United States, which afforded some tuition support and whatnot. But then when I began my career, I worked during the day. I went to get a master's degree in the evening. I ended up doing additional graduate school in the evening. But even up until now, I'm still doing self-study courses. And I have found that those courses and investing in yourself, one, it just allows you to speak much more fluently about a range of topics, and in some cases actually master some technical skills. But it also serves as an indicator, as people are considering you for opportunities, that you're going to put in the additional work. So I think doing a good job with what you're doing, investing in yourself along the way. And then I think the third piece is, sometimes you have to take a degree of risk and jump into things that you may not be fully ready for. But if people have faith in you to be able to do it, sometimes you just have to go. And I would say that there is a corollary of that, of sometimes choosing when to disregard what the safe course is. So I had been in, at the start of my career, there was a training program I really wanted to go to that historically meant that you might narrow some of your career choices because you weren't necessarily following the check the box route to senior leadership. But I thought that investing in myself and building some higher technical skills while I was still young was going to be worth it. And that proved to be the case. And so I had to tell a boss who cared about me that I wanted to take a little bit more risk. And I think that those three things together of doing a good job in the present, investing in yourself for the future, and then taking appropriate and measured risks, I think those three things together can really help lead towards additional doors and opportunities opening over time.
Yeah, cool. Thanks, Jude. I really like that. So whatever you hope to do a really good job at what you're doing right now. So essentially, like, really stop thinking about the end results and be phenomenal at the process and enjoy the process. Yeah?
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, I like that. And then investing in yourself on a continuous basis, always volunteer for training, and then take risks and essentially get out your comfort zone from time to time. I really like all of that. Whatever you hope to do, get really good at what you're doing right now, because it's so true. If you really focus on just, you said you asked your boss back in the day, is there anything else you need doing at the end of each day? That's focusing on what you're doing right now and really caring about the methodology and the process. And people see that, and other people see that you actually care and you're showing attention to detail. And I think that plus some hard work, it just gets you everywhere, and it gets you additional opportunity. And it, like you said, it gets you extra mentoring. And I think sometimes, I think especially, and this probably makes me start to sound a bit old, but I think especially these days, people can sometimes just, everyone just wants to skip to the end, and it just doesn't work like that, mate, does it?
No, and I think there's also something to be said for the journey, right? I had the privilege the first two times, every time that I ever had the opportunity to serve overseas outside of the United States, I realized that this was a privilege, right? And yeah. So when I was a captain in the Air Force, which is like a middle level rank, I had the great privilege of actually doing the real work as an individual contributor and enjoying the fact that I could really focus on the particular portfolio of activities that I had to do. And also, frankly, just enjoy that point, being in my 20s, getting the privilege of living in Germany and exploring another dimension of life. And that's a fundamentally different experience than when 20 plus years later, I was serving as one of the leaders in that organization. And they both had their different benefits. And so sometimes you just have to enjoy what it is that you're, what you have at present, even if you're not in charge of hundreds of people or thousands of people or a team or anything. And so I think that when it comes to information technology and cybersecurity, I think it's quite a reasonable goal to aspire to be a chief information security officer or to lead teams of people doing cybersecurity work. But there's times when you're working on a particular project for a company or organization, or you're having you're serving a client on a particular thing as an individual contributor, there's great value in just like actually learning deeply from that. And then I think that those are the experiences later on that when you have the opportunity to serve in leadership positions, they can sometimes set you apart, both in the quality of the work that you provide and the trust you build with both clients and teammates. And so one of the metaphors I've used when I talk to people who are earlier on in their career is that there's, you know, if you imagine like a straw, right? Imagine a straw, and next to a straw, imagine like a little pyramid. So you can build a relatively narrow straw or reed by moving from job to job where you're progressing quite quickly and everything. And there are times that people do that career-wise, and it's entirely appropriate, and they're brilliant, and they're extremely good leaders, and it works. There's other times, and I think that probably most human beings fall into the second category, where there's value in not rushing sometimes and building this solid base of experience that you can draw upon when you're faced with different challenges. And so although I did get promoted relatively quickly, there were times I chose to slow down where I was afforded opportunities to get promoted. And for a combination of personal reasons and also for personal growth, I chose to say, I think I'd like to stay at the same level bureaucratically, but lateral and try something else. And I found that to be deeply beneficial, so that then later on when I was large groups of people, they could see that I actually had a degree of, if not expertise, at least experience that I was bringing into things. And so I think that's part of the balancing act is sometimes you move really fast, but sometimes it's okay to really just enjoy the journey.
Yeah, I think it's being a bit more strategic and a bit more intelligent with it. And then when the time is right, you go in there and you've got your ducks in a row. You know exactly what you're doing because you've taken a bit longer. Yeah, it's nice to hear you're well-traveled as well. I know last time we spoke, you spent some time in France as well. And I know you just mentioned Germany. And I think that does you the world of good, doesn't it? I think people should do that more. I've heard a lot of stuff about one of the first questions you should always ask someone is where they've been, because it can tell you a lot about them. Not everyone gets the opportunity. I think it should be embraced because I think it really adds to your experience and your character.
Absolutely. I think that having the opportunity to understand that there's different perspectives on issues and there's different ways to, so I personally find it extremely enriching to just visit and travel and see other cultures and to see how people work through things. And I think one of the things is there's so many parts of the world I'd like to spend more time in. So I chose to focus my career on Europe. Although I've had some brief opportunities to travel in other parts of the world, I ended up spending most of my time either in Europe or in portions of the Middle East. And what I would offer is that each of those experiences helped me grow as a person. And I think when it comes to the professional world, one of the things that you realize is that there's other approaches to doing work that can be useful to bring in and to reflect on. So, for example, when I had the opportunity to work with law enforcement in the United Kingdom, they have a different policing model in some cases than how the United States does certain things. It's the same in Germany. It's the same in France. So some of their methods were different and some of their organizational structures were different. But in all three cases, four countries have highly professional law enforcement services. And I found that there were things that I learned by talking with my colleagues from other countries that I then chose to bring back. And I think that having this opportunity to think about other ways of doing business, it can be enriching on a personal level, but also professionally, it can give you some things to think about, that maybe some ideas to ingest wherever you happen to be serving.
Yeah. I find even obviously going different parts of Europe and the Middle East, people are culturally so different. Even just going, I find dealing with someone in New York is very different to dealing with someone in California, like even across America. It's like different countries from state to state.
Absolutely. So, I had the opportunity to, I personally grew up in the Midwest, but then my first assignment was living in the northwestern part of the United States. And then I ended up serving the bulk of my career either in the mid-Atlantic states. And then I served quite a lot in the South as a reservist. And I think your cultural assessment is correct that there is great diversity in thought and perspective across the United States.
Yeah. No. Jude, about 5 or 10 minutes ago, you mentioned about enjoying the journey. And I think that's a massive one as well. It's, you pick up these new things and like in the cut and thrust of it all. And sometimes it might feel a bit overwhelming and sometimes it might feel a bit stressful. But when I know from different friends I've got, when all that stuff goes, if ever I've had a friend that's sold a business or ever I've had someone that's gone through a time where they're not as busy, like they all of a sudden like really miss those times. And I think there's a lot to be said for enjoying that, because when you're in the mix of it and stuff like that, ultimately that's the juice, like that's the best bit. And at the time it doesn't always feel like it, but it is. But cool, yeah. So over the years, and I know I've mentioned it'd be nice to dig into some different stories. And sure. Like I said, I appreciate you probably won't be able to talk about everything. Yeah, any interesting ones in particular you'd like to share with us that you're allowed?
Yeah, certainly. I can give you some vignettes that were important to me personally. I had the opportunity to serve in the NATO-led stabilization force in Bosnia-Herzegovina in the late 1990s. And it was, for those that might be unfamiliar with it, the former Yugoslavia descended into a complex series of civil wars. In 1995, the Dayton Peace Accords were struck and a NATO-led peace enforcement mission went in to separate the parties that had been warring and then over time to stabilize the country. And although there are still tensions in Bosnia-Herzegovina, there has not been a return to conflict as there had been now going on 30 years. And so I had the chance to serve there a few years after the Dayton Peace Accord had first been implemented. And that was a great privilege. One is Herzegovina is an exceptionally beautiful country, and the people there have an extremely interesting series of overlapping cultures. And so personally, it was just amazing for me to learn in that environment. It was also the first time I had served in a deployed peacekeeping or peace enforcement mission. So that was deeply enriching. And it was a time that the world was attempting to do things in a way that had not been done for quite some time. And for example, the sector that I served in, where the majority of the United States' forces were, there was a large Russian contingent who was there, and we were serving side by side with them. There were a number of Scandinavian countries and Poland in our sector, as well as Turkey. And everyone, there's always disagreements about things, but people were working together as this country's economy was starting to get itself going and everything, and tensions were starting to subside. So at a personal level, that was deeply rewarding, and I think probably one of the highlights of my career, because I felt like I was actually good in the world in a very measurable way, or it was easy to understand the value of what we were. That was an important personal experience. It was.
I can imagine as well. Sorry to interrupt you. I can imagine the bond that you get with the people you're over there doing it with. I bet is just something pretty unique. I'm imagining.
Absolutely. Certainly, the people that you're serving with on your team, you develop a close relationship with them. In Bosnia, in winter, some of that was as simple as shoveling snow, because there tends to be quite a lot of it. But also thinking through some of the mission-related activities. And frankly, I was serving with a small team of people over there. And so you're eating a lot of meals with them. You're going to the gym with them. For the nature of our mission, we have the opportunity to serve in a lot of different settings. So you develop a really close bond with those people. And then I also had the opportunity to work with a number of other parties. So at the time, the United Nations was present as well. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe was present. And so you develop these myriad of relationships and everything. And for someone like me, who had always been interested in international relations and everything, it was quite a privilege to see the actual implementation and to participate in it and to take it from the degree of abstraction when you're thinking about it in a classroom.
Yeah, no. Do you miss those days?
I think that there's portions of it that I miss and everything.
Yeah.
I think that I still have the opportunity to continue to participate in some working groups globally through organizations like the International Association of Chiefs and Police and others. And although I work in the private sector now and I'm learning a great deal and really enjoying it, I find that's an outlet for a desire to still be a part of public service. Yeah, that was one example. I could offer another one that was another meaningful opportunity for me personally. And that's when I had the privilege of being a Department of Defense civil servant who was assigned and on loan to the FBI cyber division, as you mentioned at the start. Mm-hmm. And that was about 12 or 13 years ago. And it was when the United States was thinking through the evolution responsibilities between what the Department of Defense and United States Cyber Command was going to do, what the Department of Homeland Security was going to do, what the FBI was going to do, and then also what the role was going to be for the private sector and some of the different associations and structures that exist, like the ISACs in the United States. And so it was a really interesting time to be at the crossroads of those discussions. And although I wasn't a decision maker, I was one of the staff that was working to build trust and understanding between all sides. If you've ever been to Washington, there's the metro commute between the Pentagon and FBI headquarters is really just a few minutes long. It's right.
Okay.
It's just right across the river. So I had the chance to go back and forth and help to do and to play a role in establishing processes and procedures and to facilitate agreements and understanding between the different parts of the United States government, which is frankly a pretty complex organization. And so for me, that was exceptionally fulfilling and rewarding, because I got to it's a little bit like what we were talking about earlier about people from different countries, understanding the perspective of different agencies and how to forge both trust and then ultimately agreement. That was another portion of my career that I found to be extremely rewarding. And then later on, frankly, if you have enough beverages and meals with people from all the different sides, when you run into them later on, you end up having a pretty nice network of friends and colleagues to stay in touch with. But you also really understand why people make decisions a certain way. So you start understanding what their motivations are and what their incentives are. And so over time, I was like, oh, okay, so this is why agency X is thinking about it this way, because culturally, this is how they do this mission. And being able to go back and forth between all the sides and get them to agree what the different people would do and everything and what the division of labor would be, that was very rewarding at the time. And then also, frankly, it's helped me in other settings later on, because I found that there's similarities, even if it's different challenges.
100%. I know you talk about everything you've mentioned there about liaising with different departments and people from different parts of the world, or people in different departments of the DoD and divisions. But the whole time you're thinking, I was thinking, no wonder you're a communicative guy. And I bet that worked wonders for your communication. And I know, like, the stuff you'd be doing now is very client facing and you're dealing with customers. Like, what you've just mentioned there will have set you up really well for that kind of thing.
It's provided a foundation, and that what I'm learning from my engagements with people like you and with clients and with my peers is, personally, I'm also learning that there are some differences depending on the setting of clients that you're supporting. And our company, we support people in different industries and sectors, and actually in different parts of the United States. And I'm kind of, what you mentioned earlier about sort of these cultural differences, finding that there are some sectors in some regions where people want to have a deep conversation about what should we do in this situation and how do we build trust across the team. And then, frankly, we have other clients that are like, we hired you to solve this problem, please go and get it done. And they, as long as things are on track and the metrics are on track, they want an update once a week and then maybe check in once a month. Mm. And it's not because they care, but it's because that's the norm and the expectation and the things that are the priorities for them. And so for me, in terms of my own personal growth and learning, I had gotten to a pretty high state of development of understanding how to communicate with people from different countries that were doing the same kind of work as me, or different agencies who were in the same kind of work and line of work as me. And now I'm learning that there's more to learn as I work across different sectors and with different people from different parts of the country.
You're right. And yeah, people are so different, and technical and non-technical people, and the way people view risk, and some people take security really seriously and they're a pleasure to deal with, and some people perhaps don't, and they're just doing it because they're being told that they have to do it. Yeah, they come in all shapes and sizes, don't they, Jude?
Indeed.
Cool. Yeah. In terms of, like, books, I know you've had, like, good mentors over the years and stuff like that, and you've dug into how that's helped you. But in terms of, like, content or books or podcasts, I know you said when you go running, you have some time to yourself, which is, like, your form of meditation. But sometimes you're listening to podcasts and stuff like that. What content, whether it be books or pods, are you consuming, or have you consumed, that's had the most impact in terms of making you a better version of yourself?
Yeah, there's a number of things. I'm a pretty avid reader and consumer. I will give you a very non-traditional book to represent or to present on a podcast about cybersecurity, but it's a book by a guy named John W. Kingdon, and it's called Agendas, Alternatives, and Public Policies. And you might think, what does that have to do with anything? Agendas, Alternatives, and Public Policies. So I had the opportunity along the way to decide to get a PhD in public policy, which was helpful for me as a civil servant in terms of what I learned. But this book actually had a really big impact on me, because this professor, this book's like probably 40 years old now, he writes about this idea about how it's really hard to get a decision to be made in a democracy, particularly in the United States, where you have all these competing structures. So you have the interest groups, you have whether they could be a business community or associations that are for or against something. You have the different stakeholders inside the executive branch. You have the different stakeholders in Congress. And so what Kingdon wrote about was this idea that all these streams of activity could come together and there'd be this thing called a policy window that would open. And for just a brief period of time, somebody called a policy entrepreneur could get something done, everybody to agree on something. And I found that, although that was in the context of like big public policy for the country, It is true in so many settings inside companies and inside various organizations as well, where you have all these competing people arguing about what should be done and how to do things. And there can be the person who calmly comes forward and says, okay, here is the time and place where we can get people to decide that we're going to do something. And that could be like the restructuring of the company. It could be like launching a new practice or whatever. So that book, which is pretty short actually, really can explain how complex things can nonetheless be resolved and there's an opportunity to get something done. So that was a book that had a profound influence on me. I read it probably 20 plus years ago in grad school. I would say that like more immediately, I am a big consumer of news. So I subscribe to the Financial Times and the Wall Street Journal, okay, and the New York Times and the Washington Post. I find that those, and The Economist, I've always been a reader of The Economist. I found that to be very useful. I would say that I usually have a routine where I will listen to National Public Radio, like just the quick snippet of the news. And then I also pretty frequently listen to the news from France. One is it keeps the French language going in my head. But it's fascinating to hear a completely different perspective in a different language about current world events. And although I wish I could do the same thing in six languages, there's only two languages where I have the facility to do that. I find that that's really helpful as well. And then I would say that there are a couple of other podcasts I found where I learn deeply about things. And so there's a few programs going on. I don't know if you ever listened to The Daily from the New York Times. That's a 20, 25 minutes about a major topic that's going on. And then there's a program in the United States called Fresh Air by Terry Gross on National Public Radio that comes out of Philadelphia, I believe, where she interviews someone deeply for about 50 minutes. And I have found that those things actually help me put in context a lot of other things. And when it comes to like things that are relevant to my current job, artificial intelligence or whatever, listening to how people talk about those things who are non-technical or not in this field and the kind of the conversation that people have about it, I found that's helped me. So that when I'm talking to senior leaders who are non-technical, to be able to communicate about those technical challenges or opportunities.
That's really interesting because I think that is such an underrated skill. I talk about this fairly frequently, but I think the ability to have a conversation or to articulate risk or to explain something to a non-technical stakeholder, if you can do that well, you're really valuable to any organization or any business. That's a phenomenal skill. So that's basically listening to pretty smart, intelligent people and how they go about explaining things. And that really helps you to pull inspiration.
Like Terry Gross, if you've ever listened to her, she's like an expert interviewer. Okay. And what she has done is she's figured out how to talk to an expert, I guess, identify experts who are potential guests, and then get them to explain something deeply in a way that can resonate and can help people learn and understand, even if they're not an expert in whatever it is that happens to be.
I like that. I'm good. Terry Gross, yeah?
Gross, for sure.
Okay, Fresh Air. Yeah,
you'll get hooked.
Yeah, because what I do is I work insane hours, so I always try and have 30, 40 minutes where I just walk and put something on where I'm listening. And, but I still like it to be like a self-development time, even though I'm technically chilling and walking. So that could work quite nicely. I've seen it myself, dude. Like when clients are stressed or stuff needs to happen, and if you could just get your words down like in the shortest amount of words possible, and almost simplify the problem and provide a solution. Like it's very much appreciated, isn't it?
I was just talking with some of our more junior team members about the fact that oftentimes when you're speaking with senior leaders, a conversation where you're just looking at them across the table with one slide is often much more powerful than 33 or no slides for that matter. And how condensing and the key ideas and synthesizing them to a single sheet of paper that's well written, backed up oftentimes by a deeper report, is much better than some sort of sprawling thing where it's really difficult to understand what the point is. And so I have found that, I don't know if you've ever had this experience where you might be tasked with writing a paper for school or for somebody, and you work really hard and you write 15 pages and you realize this is not very good. And then sometimes I found it's actually easier to start over and to write clean and fresh for, and you come up with the 5 to 10 pages that you wanted, but there's the learning process that goes through. And sometimes that's more efficient than editing.
Yeah, I have to, if I do anything like that, I have to get up in the morning, have a coffee and do it straight away. It's the only time my brain can facilitate that type of work. Like I do a weekly newsletter. If I don't do it first thing on a Thursday morning with a coffee, I delay it, and hence the reason it was 4 days late this week, because I kept doing it. But yeah, my brain can only function on that level first thing. But yeah, that's great, dude. It's been a really nice, I actually genuinely could go on. And for everyone listening, I promised you that I wouldn't keep him any longer than on the hour, and I've gone 4 minutes over already. So sorry, mate, I've broke my promise already.
It's been a privilege. I think one of the things that I've enjoyed by listening to your podcast is the different perspectives. And also you realize perhaps it's just because of how cybersecurity has evolved over the last 30 years, is a lot of people have come to this field from just such a different variety of backgrounds. Mm. And I think that's one of the interesting things about working in this space, is you'll talk with somebody and they're in this space and you're like, oh, what did you do originally? And they're like, I was a chemistry major, or I was in theater or whatever. And you just get this interesting mix of people together. And I think that that's probably where a lot of innovation comes from. And it's also where a lot of different perspectives come from. So anyway, I just want to thank you as well. It's been a privilege.
Yeah, no, thanks. It's good. And it's been nice. And I know it's been in the making for a while. It seems like a while ago since we had that little initial chat, which was great as well. But yeah, thanks again. It's been one of those ones where you just chat. You don't even need to think. And they're the best ones. And you've taught me a few things as well. I think that bit at the end about Terry, I just think that's massive, that Terry Gross thing. Because I think if the technical skills matter and things like that matter, but if you get these communication things right and you can explain things well, I think that will carry the likes of me, you, and the listeners really well in our careers. So I think it's really good.